Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. We've got some really fascinating stuff to dig into today. We're diving into these free ebooks. Yeah, you heard that right. Free ebooks over at tomsfreebooks.com. And they're by this guy, Tom Woods. You might recognize the name. He's written a bunch of New York Times bestsellers. And he even won the Hayek Lifetime Achievement Award, which is a pretty big deal in certain circles. But what we're really interested in today are his ideas about government regulation and how those regulations, or the lack of them, can really shake things up in the economy. And let me tell you, if you're someone who thinks the American establishment has been killing it, doing a fantastic job for everybody, well, these ebooks might make you raise an eyebrow or two.
Yeah, Tom definitely doesn't pull any punches. I mean, he really takes aim at what he calls the deregulation myth, this idea that the 2008 financial crisis was all because the government wasn't doing enough regulating.
Yeah, that's the one you hear all the time, right?
Yeah.
Less regulation equals total economic meltdown. But Tom's argument is way more complicated than that.
Exactly. He makes this really interesting point. He says a lot of the risky stuff that banks were doing before the 2008 crisis, the things that supposedly caused the whole thing to blow up, were things they could have been doing anyway, even with more regulations. Like, there wasn't some specific rule that got repealed that would have stopped those actions from happening in the first place.
So it's not as simple as get rid of the rules and everything goes to hell.
Nope. Not even close. And that's what makes Tom's take so interesting. He's basically saying that when people blame deregulation as the main culprit, they're kind of missing the bigger picture. Like, they're ignoring the deeper flaws that are already baked into the system. He uses Bernie Madoff as an example. You know, the guy behind that massive Ponzi scheme?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Tom points out that the SEC, even with all their funding and staff, and they had a lot, they totally missed Madoff's scheme for years.
That's crazy. If the regulators can miss something that big, even with all those resources,
yeah.
I mean, what does that really say about the whole idea of regulation as a way to protect us?
It definitely raises some serious questions, right? Like, maybe it's not just about the specific rules. Maybe it's about the system itself. And this is where he starts critiquing things like the Dodd-Frank Act, which was, you know, passed after 2008, supposedly to prevent another crisis from happening. But Tom argues that it doesn't really address some of the fundamental problems, like the role of the Federal Reserve in creating those housing bubbles in the first place, or the fact that regulatory agencies can sometimes get too cozy with the industries they're supposed to be regulating.
So just slapping on more regulations, that might not actually solve the problem?
That's exactly what Tom wants us to consider. He thinks we need to shift our focus and look more closely at the role of government housing policy in the 2008 crisis, which is something that often gets overlooked.
Now, that's interesting. So how does housing policy fit into all of this?
Well, Tom argues that government agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they were under a ton of pressure to meet these affordable housing goals. And that pressure ended up pushing them to purchase a lot of risky subprime mortgages and to lower their underwriting standards. Basically, they were being incentivized to take on more and more risk, which, of course, ended up fueling the whole housing bubble.
Ah, okay. So if these government agencies are gobbling up all these risky mortgages, it's kind of creating this ripple effect. That messes up the whole market, right?
Exactly. And Tom brings up this company, Countrywide Financial. They were a big lender back then. And they were basically catering to this huge demand for subprime mortgages coming from Fannie and Freddie, which, again, just adds more fuel to the fire.
It's almost like the government was kind of accidentally pushing everyone to behave in this really risky way.
That's a really important part of Tom's argument. And get this, he points out, that at first, all these government officials, they were taking credit for the fact that home ownership rates were going up, you know, because of their policies. But then when the bubble burst, suddenly they didn't want anything to do with it.
Oh, wow. So it's like, we'll take the credit for the good stuff, but don't blame us when things go south.
Right. Makes you think about accountability and the whole issue of unintended consequences when the government tries to intervene in the market. And this all leads into another area where Tom challenges the conventional wisdom, the role of those really complex financial instruments, like mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps that everyone always talks about.
Oh, yeah, those. Those are the things that nobody seems to understand. But they always get blamed for tanking the economy.
Exactly. And Tom pushes back on that, too. It's like everyone just assumes that these things are inherently evil. Like, they're designed to bring down the whole system. But Tom makes the case that these instruments, you know, like the mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps, they actually serve a purpose. They're meant to spread out risk and maybe even help minimize losses. It's kind of similar to how insurance works.
Oh, okay. So instead of being automatically bad, they're more like tools, right? They can be used in good ways or bad ways, depending on the situation.
That's a great way to think about it. And he does say that those inaccurate ratings, those definitely played a role. They misled a lot of investors. But his main point is that even with those bad ratings, the subprime instruments were still basically doing what they were supposed to do. High risk, high interest rates.
So they were accurately reflecting how risky those mortgages actually were.
Exactly. It wasn't the instruments themselves that were the problem. It was the stuff underneath, those bad mortgages that were inflating the whole bubble.
I get it. It's like, you can't blame the thermometer for giving you a fever. You got to look at the actual illness.
Perfect analogy. And to illustrate his point even further, Tom brings up Goldman Sachs and how they handled those credit default swaps as a good example of managing risk the right way. They didn't put all their eggs in one basket like AIG. They diversified. They required collateral.
So even in a crazy market, if you're smart about managing risk, you can still weather the storm.
Absolutely. And to really drive that home, Tom points out that the whole credit default swap market, it actually functioned pretty smoothly, even after Fannie and Freddie were nationalized.
So even when those giant government-backed agencies were in trouble, the system didn't just completely implode. That kind of goes against that whole house of cards analogy that people always use to describe the financial system. But you know what I'm still curious about? Glass-Steagall. That always seems to come up in these discussions. Like, everyone says repealing it was this huge mistake.
Right. Like, it opened the floodgates to all sorts of problems. But here's where Tom really gets into the weeds and starts debunking some of those common misconceptions. He points out that Glass-Steagall wasn't actually fully repealed, like a lot of people think it was.
Wait a minute. Are you serious? So all those arguments about it causing the crisis, they're based on a false premise.
That's what Tom is saying. The restrictions that were still in place for commercial banks, those continue to apply. It's just not true that the partial repeal somehow allowed those banks to start underwriting or dealing in securities. That's a misunderstanding of what the legislation actually did.
So again, it's another example of people oversimplifying things.
And ending up with the wrong story. And he also takes apart another common argument, the one about the partial repeal creating those too big to fail institutions. He shows how all kinds of financial entities, regulated and unregulated, they all took a hit because they were holding those bad mortgages.
So it wasn't just limited to one type of institution. It was more widespread than that.
Exactly. It's a more nuanced situation than people make it out to be. And to really hammer home that point, he brings up this irony. You know how everyone praises Canada for handling the crisis so well?
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, those same people are usually advocating for bringing back Glass-Steagall. But here's the thing. Canada never even had Glass-Steagall to begin with.
That's interesting. I guess it's all about context, right? What works in one situation might not be the answer somewhere else.
Exactly. And that's why Tom is encouraging us to think deeper. Look beyond that simple story about deregulation and consider all those complex systemic issues that were at play.
So we've talked a lot about the 2008 crisis and all those misconceptions surrounding it. But I'm also really interested in Tom's views on education. It seems like a bit of a shift from all this economics and finance talk.
Yeah, it might seem that way at first glance, but I think it actually connects really well to his overall message. You know, Tom is really passionate about individual liberty and independent thinking, and those values definitely come through in his ideas about education.
That makes sense. He's always pushing people to question assumptions and challenge the status quo.
Right. He even argues that a lot of those traditional textbooks, they're full of what he calls conventional wisdom, which he doesn't think is always accurate, or aligned with a perspective that values individual liberty.
I can see how that would be a problem for him. He's all about encouraging people to think for themselves, not just blindly accept whatever they're being told.
Exactly. And that's why he's such a strong supporter of homeschooling, especially with a curriculum like the Ron Paul curriculum, which he actually helped develop.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. It's a pretty unique approach to education, right?
It is. It's self-taught and video-based, and it really emphasizes using primary sources. So students are engaging directly with historical texts and the writings of key thinkers.
Wow, that's so different from how most of us learned history in school. We were basically just handed a textbook and told to memorize all the facts and dates.
Right. And Tom argues that that kind of rote learning, it doesn't really encourage critical thinking or independent analysis. He thinks students should be forming their own interpretations of history based on those primary sources, not just relying on someone else's summary or analysis.
So it's more about empowering them to be active learners and critical thinkers.
Exactly. Not just passive recipients of information. And he thinks the video format, makes it a lot more engaging. It can make those complex topics more accessible and bring history and economics to life in a way that textbooks sometimes struggle to do.
Yeah, visual learning can be super effective. But it's not just about the way the material is presented, right? The content of the curriculum itself is also designed to be different.
Oh, absolutely. For example, it includes 2 full years of Western civilization and Western literature, which is a lot more in-depth than what you usually find in a standard high school curriculum.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. It sounds like he's really committed to giving students a solid foundation in those areas.
He definitely is. And he also includes courses on things like starting a home business, writing advertising copy, even personal finance for teenagers.
Those are such valuable skills, but they're often overlooked in traditional education. I bet a lot of parents would love for their kids to learn those things.
Oh, for sure. And it all ties back to that idea of individual liberty and self-reliance. You know, Tom wants to equip students with the knowledge and skills they need to succeed on their own, without being dependent on the government or any other institution.
So even though the Ron Paul curriculum might not be for everyone, it's a really fascinating example of how Tom's ideas about individual liberty, they go way beyond economics and into things like education.
It really does. And it shows how passionate he is about empowering people to think for themselves and take control of their own lives, whether it's their finances, their education, or their role in society.
Yeah, it's really interesting how he takes these big ideas about the economy.
Yeah.
And connects them to something as personal as education. Like, it all comes back to that idea of giving individuals more power, right?
Exactly. And he doesn't stop there either. There's a whole section where he talks about how to debate effectively with people who have totally different viewpoints.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Does he give any specific tips? I feel like that's something we could all use a little help with these days.
He does. And it ties back to his whole critique of traditional education. He says a lot of the arguments we hear, especially from people on the left, they're based on this particular worldview that's often presented in those same textbooks he was criticizing earlier.
Ah, so he's saying we need to be aware of the underlying assumptions behind those arguments.
Exactly. You got to understand where they're coming from. And he even suggests that a curriculum like the Ron Paul curriculum can actually help prepare students to engage in those debates more effectively because they've been exposed to a wider range of perspectives from a younger age.
That makes sense. If you've been taught to think critically and question things, you're not going to just automatically buy into any argument someone throws at you.
Right. It's about having the tools to break down those arguments and really see what's going on beneath the surface.
It's like he's giving you this behind-the-scenes look at how certain narratives get created. And then he's giving you the tools to challenge those narratives.
That's a great way to put it. He doesn't want people just parroting what they've heard. He wants them to think for themselves.
It's like he's saying, don't let other people define the terms of the debate. Do your own research, think it through, and be ready to make a solid argument.
Yeah. It's like a call to arms for intellectual self-defense, especially in a world where some ideas are presented as unquestionable. Like, you're not even allowed to disagree.
That's so true. It's so easy to just go with the flow.
Yeah.
And accept whatever seems to be the popular opinion.
It is, but Tom's urging us to resist that. He wants us to question everything, dig deeper, and come to our own conclusions.
So as we wrap up our deep dives into Tom Woods' free ebooks, I think the biggest takeaway is this. Don't be afraid to question the conventional wisdom.
Absolutely. Seek out different viewpoints. Think critically. And never stop learning.
Oh.
And maybe most importantly, don't shy away from those tough conversations, even if they challenge your own beliefs.
Exactly, because real understanding, it comes from wrestling with different ideas and being open to changing your mind.
Well said. So to everyone listening, what stood out to you the most? What parts really got you thinking?
Take some time to reflect on these ideas. Where could you go next to keep exploring these topics?
And if you're curious to learn more, head over to tomsfreebooks.com and check out Tom Woods' collection. You can download them for free, so why not? You might be surprised by what you discover. But remember, it's not just about reading. It's about thinking critically about what you read. Don't just take everything at face value. Question it, challenge it, and see where that takes you. Happy exploring, everyone.